It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and today I'm joined by a panel of guests to take a look at the top issues that could affect federal employees in 2012. I've got three guests with me today. Two in the studio with me are Jesse Clement from Federal Managers Association and Beth Moten from American Federation of Government Employees. And on the phone is John Palguda from the Partnership of Public Service. John, are you there with us?
I am, Jenny.
Hey,
glad
John.
Glad to be here.
How are you all doing?
Great. Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you for having us.
Well, before we get started, I'm just going to do a quick reminder for our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And if you'd like to join our discussion today and speak directly to our guests, call our toll-free number at 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Well, we're going to kick right off and have you each introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your organizations. Jesse, since you're across from me, why don't you go first and introduce
Good morning.
Yourself?
Thanks for having me. My name is Jesse Clement. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Federal Managers Association. FMA is a professional nonprofit membership-based association for managers and supervisors in the federal government. FMA has members in nearly 40 agencies across the country and some overseas. Everyone asks us, what's your average member like? Our average member is probably a GS-13 with the Department of Defense. We have about half of our membership comes from DOD because we started as a DOD Supervisors Association and have since branched out to include other managers and supervisors in several agencies. Our other biggest cohorts are SSA, IRS, EPA. If you're interested in learning more about FMA, you can check us out at www.fedmanagers.org.
And you do both the range of membership services and government affairs. So.
Absolutely. We are sponsored by GEICO, and GEICO is one of FMA's biggest partners. FMA members get a discount on GEICO services. They get a discount with Shaw Bransford. We have a partnership with them, long-term care, Blue Cross Blue Shield. We have a wide range of member benefits that we provide in-house, such as our quarterly magazine, our biweekly newsletter, not to mention two full-time lobbyists advocating on your behalf on Capitol Hill.
And that's what we're going to be talking about in a little bit today. So I want to move over for a minute and introduce everybody to Beth Moten. Beth, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Jenny, thanks for having me on the show. I'm Beth Moten. I'm the Legislative and Political Director for the American Federation of Government Employees. AFGE is a labor union that represents 650,000 federal employees all across the country in about 65 federal agencies. And also, like FMA, we do have some people overseas, mostly in DOD installations. But generally speaking, we're located here in the U.S. You know, I'd certainly urge everybody to take a look at our website, www.afge.org. We have a very aggressive legislative and political program, and of course, we negotiate collective bargaining agreements on behalf of all of our members.
Okay, great. Thank you. And John, I'm going to swing over to you for a minute, if you could talk a little bit about yourself and the partnership.
Sure. John Palguda, I'm Vice President for Policy at the Partnership and spent several decades in the federal government before joining the Partnership about 10 years ago, which is about how long we've been around. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization established in late 2001. And our role basically boils down to one, first of all, an understanding that, you know, effective government obviously is vital to the country, and an effective workforce is a vital and necessary ingredient. So our mission is to inspire people to consider government as a employer, So we want to bring great talent into government. And then the second part of our mission is to help transform the way government works so that when we get those great folks in government, they have the work environment, the resources, the leadership, and the support they need to do their jobs for the American public.
Great. Thank you. Well, one of the things I think we've got here with the three of you, and part of why we want to bring all three of you on is because we're working on a lot of the same issues, but sometimes from slightly different perspectives. And so want to give people a broad range of what happened in 2011. Federal employees and the federal workforce as a whole were sort of a target or kind of on the front lines of a lot that was going on Capitol Hill and even just through the administration. And I think we're going to see some of that keep going in 2012 here. So want to talk a little bit about looking back over the past year, what were some of the biggest issues that you think affected the federal workforce, whether it was through Congress or through other just federal workforce issues in general? Like to go around to each of you and feel free to jump in. We're having a discussion. So you want to go ahead, Jesse?
I think from my perspective, and I'm sure every single one of your listeners know that 2011 was the first year of the two-year pay freeze. That certainly got a lot of attention. It was put forth by the president at the end of 2010. It was supported by members of Congress as a means of shared sacrifice towards deficit reduction. Unfortunately, stemming from that was a bunch of other proposals that could negatively impact both federal employees and the federal workforce. But in terms of what actually happened in 2007, I feel like there was a lot of talk, but very little action. And I guess the unfortunate side of that was that there's going to be continuing a lot of talk in 2012 as a result.
Right. Beth, do you agree there was a lot of talk, and what were some of the issues you heard talked about?
Well, I agree that there was an awful lot of talk. Unfortunately, though, I think the Budget Control Act really did hurt us in a lot of ways, and aside from the fact that it just sort of put us on the front lines of deficit reduction, at the end of the day, we ended up with a $900 billion cut to agency budgets mm-hmm. across the board, which will essentially start kicking in now and through next year and for about 9 or 10 more years after that. And we are gravely concerned about, job losses mm-hmm. as a result of that, and particularly in the Department of Defense, which had already been undergoing an efficiency initiative, which was a big reduction in the size of the workforce. We were expecting a lot of bad news, frankly, in those agencies where things have already been tight, have been tight for a while, mm-hmm. But are going to get a lot worse. And we're very concerned about people not having enough resources to do what they need to get the job done.
And I think that's been a big issue is how do you have the resources, personnel, money to get what's done? John, are you seeing the same thing from the sort of side of the good government organization?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, as Beth and Jesse have already noted, I mean, the big driver here has been the budgetary considerations. And part of that, unfortunately, I mean, we started in last year in the political season of getting ready for the presidential elections, and we're hot in the midst of that. And what happens when you're distracted from the issues of how do you manage a government well? Things deteriorate, and so we don't have national agreement or even agreement within obviously Congress on what we want government to do and how much we're willing to pay for that government, and that if we don't increase the revenue side, what do we take off the table? Because you can't have something for nothing, obviously. And so what we are saying is, rather than having some rational decisions about, okay, we're going to increase here, we're going to stop doing some things, we're going to do cutbacks here, there's this impression given, incorrect, that government can continue to do everything it's doing, and it can cut back at the same time. And it just doesn't work, and things start falling off the table. And so it has been a tough year. It has not been all bad news. I mean, I think, you know, there's been growing recognition that we have to pay attention to the government workforce. We haven't backed that up with action yet, but at least a recognition that, you know, we need to do things like improve the hiring system, and we need to pay attention to the results of the Federal Employee Viewpoint Surveys, and so on. But 2011 was simply a tough year because budgets and the deficit is reaching crisis point, and we don't have a consensus on how we're going to move forward here.
And I think with that, we're going to take a stop, and when we come back, talk a little bit about some of the issues we brought up: sequestration, hiring freezes, those issues. And we're going to take a break and continue our discussion. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko. And I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. GEICO, the Government Employees Insurance Company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about GEICO's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm here with our panel of federal workforce experts to talk about what issues have been affecting federal employees both last year and now what are we looking at this year. If you have a question or comment, please feel free to give us a call toll free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we took a break, we were talking a little bit about what we had seen in 2011 that actually affected federal employees, and some of these issues are ones that started but maybe haven't come into effect yet. And I think one of the big words, as we were just talking about budget cuts, is sequestration. And that's something that happened through the deficit talks, hasn't come into effect yet, but is certainly starting actions, early outs, buyouts, budget cuts that we're seeing already and that we started seeing in 2011. Beth, can you talk to us a little bit about sequestration?
Sure. I think the situation, especially for the Department of Defense, is that sequestration is going to mean, you know, another $450 billion in cuts over 10 years of on top of the efficiency initiative that had previously been announced, which was going to be draconian in and of itself. There is a chance, of course, that sequestration could be put aside. We've got a year here for continued talks on deficit reduction issues that might lead to some sort of postponement or limitation on the amount that would actually be sequestered in the Department of Defense. But the reality is we really don't know that yet. And as a result, I think certainly Secretary Panetta has been making it seem like he's moving full scale ahead just to try to deal with the budget realities that he's facing. And I think he's assuming that sequestration will hold.
And that's something that, because it was passed by Congress, it's going to take a congressional action to change. And whether that's direct stopping sequestration altogether or cutting out parts of it, certain agencies, certain programs,
right,
there's a lot of options
that's
on
exactly
the table.
Right.
And you're already seeing legislation be introduced that would switch the burden from the Department of Defense to the other agencies under the federal workforce. Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee introduced legislation that would help DOD avoid their $450 billion in cuts by cutting the federal workforce by 10%, if not more. That doesn't help anybody. You know, it may help defense in the short term, but now you're cutting all these other agencies that may need those resources.
Right, and that's one of the big things we're seeing are these proposals mostly to cut the federal workforce right now, mostly through attrition, waiting till somebody retires and then hiring fewer employees than the number that retire. But it's still a cut and a lack of resources either way. John, I know one of the things the partnership has worked on has been looking at what happened in the 90s versus some of the attrition proposals and budget proposals we're seeing today. Are you seeing similarities there or?
Well, certainly, Jenny, there's lessons to be learned. And one of the things that we seem to keep needing to relearn is that, you know, these automatic, you know, across the board cuts or even, you know, deep targeted cuts don't work. At some level, either you decide you're going to shut down a program, or if it's going to have any hopes of achieving what you want it to do, whatever agency we're talking about, you've got to have some minimal level of resources. And if you take a look at total government outlays, if you run the numbers there, a 10% reduction across the board or not, a 10% reduction to the workforce, we're talking about 200,000 folks. And in terms of a percentage of the budget, you know, that's 0.5% of government outlays. So even if you achieved that major reduction, there's a big question as to whether or not you're really going to do a whole lot to, you know, deal with the budget deficit. But the other thing, and a big difference here, people will remember during the reinvention years in the 90s, we actually reduced the size of the government workforce by 350,000 plus. But a lot of the slack was made up for by use of contractors and other non-government entities helping government carry out the services. We don't have that luxury now. We don't have the resources to say, well, if we reduce government workers, we'll simply hire non-government workers in essence to back them up. We don't have the budget to do that. So then you look at the prospect of hollow government, organizations that simply are not equipped to do the job that they've been chartered by Congress to do. The other thing we learned, of course, and continue to learn, is that when it comes down to it, when we're talking, for example, about sequestration, once it becomes clear what the impact will be, and we're starting to see that dialogue around defense. Once it becomes clear, you know, what does $600 billion from future DoD budgets mean? People start backing away, saying, "No, we didn't mean that. You know, we're going to, you know, have that big an impact." And Congress starts responding to its constituents who say, "Hey, we still want a strong defense, and we're going to have it, right?" And you start, you know, seeing folks look for other answers. Problem is, right now, there's not a whole lot of other answers to be had.
Right, and I think one of the other issues is that the conversation that you just talked about, needing to talk about which programs to cut, what's your strategy, how are you going to move forward, that's not a short-term conversation. That's a broader, longer, bigger conversation that's more complex and probably more difficult than making some of these easy cuts right now. One of the things that I think is playing into some of the cuts, it appears to me, is some of the rhetoric we've seen out there through the media, through Congress, and I think a little bit through the presidential election. All of a sudden, they're talking about federal employees. And this started in 2011, and it seems to be driving some of this talk of cuts of workforce, cuts to budgets. Do you think this is going to go forward in 2012 and get worse, stay the same? I'll let you guys jump in on
I think it's only going to get worse. I don't want to speak for the other panelists, but if you look at when this anti-federal employee rhetoric started, it's right about the time the economy started to take a dip. And somehow there was this belief amongst the public, members of Congress, and the media that federal employees have it so good. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side. I'm out of a job, but the federal employee who lives next to me still has, but this isn't fair, our government's too big. And this just kind of gained all this traction over the last couple of years. And if you look at some of the proposals Congress is considering and some of the rhetoric coming from the current presidential candidates, I can only expect this to get worse before it gets better.
You know, I think that's true. And I think we have to be honest about this. This is not something that just sort of happened. I think it's a coordinated, mean-spirited, mm-hmm. anti-government campaign that puts government employees at risk, not only for losing their benefits or their pay, but their jobs. And this is not an accident. Frankly, I think it's entirely political. And we have tried to approach it in that fashion and make sure that people know that this is not we're not necessarily just having an intellectual argument here about the size of government or what government should do. This is an intentional plan on this on the part of the right wing to try to completely change the nature of politics in our country. And I think we have to make just be honest about that.
I think Beth brings up a good point in the sense that there is not an intellectual conversation going on about the role of government, the employees needed to do that job, and the right mix of employees and contractors. You know, you hear from federal employees all the time, I'm underpaid, I could make more money in the private sector, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics supports that. You know, they say federal employees on average are underpaid 26% less than their private sector counterparts. Well, then why are the members of Congress saying that federal employees are grossly overpaid? Why is the media reporting this? I feel like right now, no one's actually interested in the facts. They care about the rhetoric, they care about getting votes, and they don't care that it's harming 2 million federal employees in the process.
And do you think, and I'll open this up to John as well, do you think that there's some misunderstanding about who federal employees are and what they do? In fact, I just saw a survey that came out yesterday, I think, by an independent organization that, again, has backed up previous surveys. When you look at, when you ask people what they think about specific, you know, my Social Security office, mm-hmm. my IRS office, my post, you know, postal worker, they get really high marks. It was over like 66% satisfaction with their individual government services. When you just say federal government, then it drops all the way down to like 30% or right. something. And I think there's this disconnect between who government is. And John, I think you said that too, about people when they start looking at services and say, wait, not that one. I like that one.
Well, that's right, Jenny. And there is, unfortunately, an appalling lack of information and knowledge about what government actually does. And, you know, I'm afraid it's not going to change until, you know, perhaps a little bit after November 6th when we have the election. So I don't like election years in terms of, you know, trying to figure out how to effectively run government because we lack the honest dialogue around what does government do, you know, reaching agreement on what the American public, I mean, we are a democracy, what does the American public want from government? Reach consensus, and then you figure out, okay, what does it take to deliver what the public wants, and how much does it cost? And if it's more than they're willing to pay, then you go back and, okay, what do we take off the table, or where do we find the revenues to provide the services and benefits being requested? There was the a while back the dialogue around what agencies can we close down. And, you know, you talk about there was one of the agencies put on the table was Department of Commerce. But I would posit that a large part of the American public doesn't realize that the, you know, fourth of the Department of Commerce is the Patent and Trademark Office that provides a very valuable function that is paid for entirely by the fees charged by folks applying for patents and trademarks. Another large portion of Commerce is the NOAA and the National Weather Service. And then we have the Census Bureau, which carries out a function mandated in the Constitution. And when you start, peeling back and getting down to the specifics, the conversations and the decisions become very hard. In an election year, you know, those are not vote-getting conversations, so we end up with rhetoric around sweeping generalizations. Government's too big. I don't know what that means. You know, tell me which parts, and then we can have a better conversation. So it's tough, and it's part of being in government. But like I said, I just don't like election years.
Right. It definitely adds another layer to some of the complexity. I think one of the things that, at least in my observations, the way not just cutting budgets, but the way they're getting it, shrinking the government is through attrition, but also through some of these proposals like a pay freeze. You know, we've talked about moving high three to high five calculations, mm-hmm. things that directly affect federal employees. And that seems to be yet another way to tackle this whole budget conversation. And I think in some ways it might lead to federal employees leaving the government. Mm-hmm. Is it harder to recruit federal employees?
I mean, you want to talk about reducing the size of the workforce. All Congress needs to do is keep talking about implementing the proposals that they're already talking about. And those eligible to retire are going to start retiring when they would have otherwise maybe stayed for a couple years. I hear this from my members all the time. I am so afraid of what Congress is going to do to my retirement benefits. I'm going to retire now when I'm eligible instead of hanging on for a couple more years because I really like the job that I do and I feel like I'm serving the mission of my agency and the American people. Congress can talk about high three to high five and then they get the attrition without necessarily having to be the bad guys who pass attrition legislation.
Right. And I think, you know, I'd like to take another break here, but I think we will see a little bit more of this going on. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about what those specific proposals are that affect federal employees and what passed, what didn't. So we are going to stop here for a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on these issues. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact GEICO. Tell him, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm here with Beth Moten, John Palguda, and Jesse Clement. And we've been talking about some of the issues in front of Congress and generally that have been affecting the federal workforce. If you would like to be a part of the discussion today, give us a call at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we Before we took our break, we were just starting to talk about some of those proposals and how they actually directly impact federal employees. And Beth, I think you have some numbers that AFGE has put together on pay freeze, on some of these other retirement proposals and what it would mean to a federal employee.
Yes, we have done quite a number of breakdowns, and I'll just try to keep it as simple as possible. But, you know, I think a lot of people assume, back to the whole point about federal employees are just grossly overpaid, that's been promoted, frankly, by a very aggressive reporter in USA Today and a number of other people. We've also got the reality is that people who have very important jobs in the federal government, and not necessarily high-level jobs, but jobs that we all depend on for our own safety, Border Patrol officers, correctional officers in federal prisons, licensed practical nurses in the VA, and my favorite, meat and poultry inspectors, because I really like to make sure that what I'm eating is safe.
I think we all would.
But, you know, all of those jobs that I just mentioned are paid in the range of the GS-5 to GS-9. And so let me just quickly walk through that. Right now, a GS-5 is paid about $31,000 a year. By the time the 2012 is over, that person making $31,000 a year will have suffered a reduction in pay of $1,300 in order to deal with the two-year pay freeze. If the pay freeze goes to through 2013, that GS-5 making $31,000 is going to have lost $3,900. And when you think about the fact that this conversation is also about inadequate level of revenues and who's paying their fair share, I think it's appalling that we would be even in a situation that where we're asking somebody making $31,000 a year to contribute an additional almost $4,000 in order to deal with a deficit reduction problem that may be, you know, overstated, frankly, due to the economy. And I think we need to try to address that. For a GS-5 making, a GS-7 making $39,000, by the end of 2012, they will have given up $1,500. If that pay freeze goes through 2013, they will have given up $2,500. For a GS-9 making $47,000, if the pay freeze goes to the third year, they'll give up $3,000 for a total of almost $6,000.
Which really, when you hear those numbers, it puts a whole different twist on.
I think it should. I would certainly hope so. And I do see that when I'm on the Hill and I provide these numbers to people, and frankly, just the basic information about, you know, how low graded some of these crucial jobs are. People's eyes do open, and you know, it makes a big difference that when we stop talking about the federal government workforce and start talking about the meat and poultry inspector or the licensed practical nurse or other positions like that.
Yeah, and let me just weigh in too. The import of what Beth is pointing out is that when you start making changes in the, you know, conditions of employment, people do react, and we've, you know, employees make decisions based on what's happening. We've seen an increase in retirements, you know, up around 20-25% over the last year compared to the prior year. I worry about the ability of government not to attract people interested in government jobs, but the ability of government to attract people who are highly talented at the job to be done, and you know, not getting the you know, the kind of talent that we need coming into government, which is another. So you're losing some of your most experienced people. At the same time, you may actually be losing the ability to attract the kind of talent that you need. And there's a big difference between warm bodies and somebody who's really good at being a Border Patrol agent or really good at being a government attorney or a budget analyst or an intelligence analyst or a prison guard. We need folks who are good at those jobs, and you're not going to attract them, particularly if the economy does start to continue to inch up and improve. Government is at a competitive disadvantage.
Right. And I think this conversation, you know, we've got the pay freeze potentially being extended for another year. That's being considered right now in a bill that's in front of Congress to pay for the payroll tax holiday. And then we're looking at some of these other proposals to change contributions to FERS, the Federal Employee Retirement System, and CSRS. So, Beth, did you also have numbers on the retirement side?
Yeah, I do. And this is, again, the GS-5, 7, and 9. But the contribution increase that was included in H.R. 3630, the payroll tax holiday bill that the House of Representatives passed, would increase the contribution for employees by 1.5%. And, you know, what we're seeing in that situation is that for a GS-5, that increase alone is $470 a year. For a GS-7, almost $600, and for a GS-9, around $700. And again, that's an annual number, and you never get that back. And frankly, it just gets worse over time for people. But we're again talking about people who are making $31,000 up to about $48,000 a year, and asking them to give up hundreds and hundreds of dollars to help pay for a payroll tax holiday for the rest of the country. Many of whom will make a whole lot more money than somebody who's making $31,000, $48,000 a year.
I think what gets lost in this conversation is, you know, you're increasing the retirement contributions of federal employees to pay for a tax extension. You are essentially lessening the take-home pay of 2 million employees to provide every other American worker with a tax break. That it's counterproductive to what that bill is trying to do that. That doesn't stimulate the economy.
And can you guys tell our listeners right now, for those who might not be familiar with where I know there's been a lot of confusion about where that particular bill is and what's going on with the payroll tax holiday? We had a 2-month extension that's up soon.
The end of February. February 29th is when the 2-year extension and 2-month, I'm sorry, 2-month extension ends. That bill was passed by both the Senate and the House right before they left for the Christmas break. So right now, the two chambers are debating how to extend the 2% payroll tax holiday for the remainder of 2012. They had 10 months to figure out. They're currently in conference committee, a coalition which all of us belong to, the Federal Postal Coalition, which represents managers and employee groups in the federal sector, as well as the postal manager and supervisor groups, or I mean employee groups, sent a letter to all the conferees this morning urging them to leave federal employees out of the conversation when you talk about a payroll tax break.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, what we are hearing now is that this conversation, this negotiation over the remaining 10 months of the payroll tax holiday, those decisions will be made very, very soon. And there's even been some talk about trying to see if the conversation could be finished by the end of January. I think that's probably optimistic, but nevertheless, it does indicate to me that our members need to really get engaged again very, very quickly. And they were on alert all year last year and had a very welcome break for about 3 or 4 weeks. But it's time to wake up again and say, you know, we're still under attack. There's no other way to describe it. And we've got about 20 members of Congress who've been appointed to this conference committee. We are fortunate in that we do have two very strong advocates of federal employees who have been appointed by the Democratic leaders. Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland is on the conference committee. And he, of course, represents a number of federal employees in the state of Maryland. But otherwise has just been a great advocate for us. And then also Chris Van Hollen, Congressman Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, who's also on the conference committee appointed by this, Nancy Pelosi, and has already done an amazing job for us in various places that he's served in the last year, from the super committee and background talks with the Simpson-Bowles Commission and others. And I think it has made all the difference in the world when we have our very strong allies who are in the room when these decisions are going down, because otherwise it's a lot of people talking past each other, a lot of people talking in very broad strokes, a lot of political rhetoric that ultimately undermines the very valuable work that federal employees and managers do.
Right. And so that's one issue right off the bat that federal employees are facing again in 2012. We've talked pay freeze and retirement changes. One thing that also came out this year was that the president proposed a 0.5% pay increase, which is a little bit changed to the conversation. Where do you think that's going? What do you think about that?
I think it shows a commitment from the administration to stick to their promise of only a 2-year pay freeze. You know, it's only 0.5%, which is far lower than the employment cost index, which the federal employee pay raise is supposed to be based off of. But it is something. However, when we talk about deficit reduction and even the payroll tax extension, I am concerned that in order to get other issues through Congress, if those other issues include a pay for with another year extension of the federal employee pay freeze, that support from the administration may not be there.
You know, I hope that's not correct. We were, of course, very disappointed in the 0.5% pay increase proposal that has come from the president. We were hopeful that it would be more than that, not necessarily substantially more, but certainly more than 0.5%. And we have made our views known to the White House. but I will also just say that I agree with Jesse. We don't exactly know how this will all play out. It will have to be legislated through the appropriations process. We will be fighting very vigorously to hang on to that 0.5, but also to see if we can push it a little higher. I know that will be very difficult, but I think it's important to keep pressing, because this is not something that's unreasonable. And in fact, our people have already given up $60 billion over 10 years just from the 2-year pay freeze alone. And that's a number that raises a lot of eyebrows when we go up on Capitol Hill. But that is, in fact, the number that was issued by the president when he put out the 2-year pay freeze. So we have to make sure our members are getting the credit for what they've already done and what a lot of Americans have not done to try to deal with this deficit reduction issue.
Go ahead, John.
And I agree, of course. And this is an area where, from a, just a, an effective management, good management perspective, any decision the president made, he was going to be attacked by, you know, somebody. You can't make everybody happy on something like this. I think it was important symbolically to put something on the table for a pay increase, and you know, we'll see if that holds. I think at least there's a chance. It's not a done deal by any means. There's a chance the 0.5% will hold. I think it's going to be really tough to see that increased. So you know, holding on to the 0.5% would actually be a bit of a victory. But you know, the other thing, you know, talking following up on Beth's comment about you know, appreciation for what federal employees have done, both in terms of the sacrifice they've made on the pay and benefits area, I would hope that you know, there would be recognition again over what federal employees bring to the table, just in terms of the jobs they do and the dedication that they show. I mean, we're not seeing, you know, massive displays of dissatisfaction, you know, being acted out in the workplace, because every day government workers are still going to the job. They're getting the job done under tough circumstances. You know, they're still showing amazingly, you know, positive attitudes towards the work they do. The annual Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, still very high levels of satisfaction, understanding that the work they do is important. They like the work they do. Of course, they have concerns about pay and benefits, but I would hope that, you know, through all of the dialogue that we're going to be hearing the next year, that there's at least some growing recognition that, hey, we've got a little over 2 million civilian employees in government who are doing a heck of a job under tough circumstances. And, you know, let's not forget about that.
And I think that's definitely something every group is going to try to push forward with. We're going to take a minute here to stop for our final break of this show. And when we return, I'd like to talk about another administrative proposal that just came out, some of the reorganization of a couple agencies together, and whether that's something federal employees need to look forward to and be on the lookout for in the coming year. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing, or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue or red, or in my case, green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering our last segment of the show. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, please feel free to call us on our toll-free number, 1-877-936-9333, or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And now, when we left for our break, we mentioned the word reorganization. That's another proposal that's come out from the administration this year. John, I know you've touched a little bit on Department of Commerce and NOAA. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the administration is proposing right now?
Well, sure. I mean, and reorganization is not a dirty word. There's nothing that suggests that, you know, the way government is organized right now is absolutely the best, most perfect way. So I think having what the administration is talking about is merging perhaps a number of federal entities and organizations to achieve some efficiencies. If you if you put several organizations together rather than four HR shops, you may only need one human resources office, and you can streamline other things. The problem with reorganization is that it's typically or frequently not certainly not easy to do, but also it's not always the panacea. It doesn't solve all the problems. If you're under-resourced, you may still end up being under-resourced. But I think the notion of at least looking at different ways to organize how government does its work is a good thing. I think that people need to understand that a good reorganization requires an upfront investment. It's not an immediate cost savings. You have to invest in planning. In if you're moving offices, I mean, there's there's the cost associated with physical moves, and what do you do with a vacated property, and do you have to build new properties? There's a lot that goes in. It may actually cost you a little bit more the first year for longer term savings, but I think it's a decent thing to talk about. But I we can also learn from past reorganizations. The most recent major one, obviously, was Homeland Security, where we put 22 different federal entities together into Homeland Security. I think there were some good things that resulted, but it was they're still trying to work out some of the bugs from that reorganization.
Well, and I think that kind of goes into what we talked about earlier with any of these proposals, is some of these are long-term. They're not the short-term fixes that I think we might see some people on Capitol Hill looking at federal employee issues as being this short-term savings. Is there a fear that, Beth and Jesse, do you guys have any fear that Congress might look at some of these proposals, like this reorganization of commerce and all the trade entities in the government, and think, here's something we can do for federal employees, and what would be the ramification of them doing that?
Well, I think, we've certainly seen this sort of broad reorganization authority talked about as legislation in the past. And although we've got some concerns about the proposal that came out of the administration, there is one good thing about it, which is that it is organized, targeted, it was thought through, and it's not some sort of blanket authority that allows the president more or less to do whatever he wants whenever he wants to. And that's some of the stuff that we've seen in the past and the coming out of the Congress. Now, fortunately, we've been able to beat that back. But I do worry that exactly what you said, that there's no reason in why the House of Representatives might not take that proposal from the White House and say, let's broaden this, let's make this much, much bigger, and also, let's go after the agencies we don't really like very much for political reasons and make them much more vulnerable so that we can try to shrink the programs that we think are not right. And that's the part that's particularly worrisome, because ultimately we do have a democracy here, and the decision about what agencies are there should be legislated, and it should not be just given to the executive branch. And we really hope that that we can prevail on that.
So yet another thing federal employees are going to need to be on the lookout for, at least be aware of this year. We've touched on a lot of the issues that are out there that could potentially harm federal employees, or at least change the way government is structured. Are there any issues that are positive, things that have happened that have made the federal government more efficient, that have helped federal employees, things that federal employees can look at and say it's not all bad?
Well, I think there was one key piece of legislation that was passed last year that didn't get much attention, and that was a bill to provide a flag to federal employees who have died while in the line of duty, just as the military, receives a flag to drape over the casket of the fallen soldier. Federal employees can now do that as well. That bill, I love the story of this bill because it's such a good government democracy in action grassroots story. Two former military servicemen and then feds, now retired, put an op-ed in their local paper supporting this idea That op-ed was noticed by their member of Congress, who turned around and introduced legislation supporting this, and they reached out to the federal employee organizations. And Jenny, you had a big hand in making sure that bill got through Congress, so I'll let you give some more information on that process.
Well, I think it is. Thanks, Jesse. I think it is a good kind of showing of how one person or two people can make a difference, and I hope we see more of that, and it recognizes federal employees and the service they do to their country as well. These two gentlemen had an idea, as you said. It got turned into a bill, and it passed within a year, which is
unheard of.
kind of interesting for Congress a lot of times. But what it does basically is allows agencies to provide a flag to the next of kin of a federal employee who was killed in the line of duty. And I think one of the things, and this goes to what John and Beth and Jesse have all talked about, with people not realizing what federal employees do, and that we have so many federal employees who serve in combat zones, who serve in, you know, maybe not a U.S. combat zone that we're involved in, but some other foreign country that's, you know,
targeted U.S. embassies.
Right, unrest. We've got border patrol agents. We've got drug enforcement agents, FBI agents, postal workers, census workers, you name it.
There's even been collectors.
Some, right, debt collectors. I think there have been some food service inspectors. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in the last year, we had somebody fly an airplane into the IRS building in Austin. You know, so there are federal employees. And again, it goes back to this individual. There are people who are directly serving their country and some who unfortunately give their lives in service of the country. So it was one positive bill that recognized feds. So one thing that got through, was there anything else that which was a great bill, and a lot of good work and good from all the federal employee organizations went into that. But were there other issues that either legislative or otherwise just good government issues that?
Well, I think the administration, has not gotten recognition outside for some of the good management efforts they've been trying to instill within government, and the fact that they're paying attention to workforce issues. This administration, Beth, I don't want to tread on your territory, but I believe that they have tried to improve outreach with the unions. Compared to, say, perhaps the prior administration. They've worked on hiring reform, as I had mentioned. Even when the president announced the reorganization that we were, or proposed reorganization that we just talked about, in his statement, he was very careful to talk about, the value of the work those employees were doing in those agencies, and that this was not something that was motivated by workers, but rather it was an attempt to try to improve outcomes. But taking time to recognize the hardworking federal employees. So I think there have been good things happening within government. From a workforce management perspective, we should not lose sight of, and I tend to be an optimist sometimes even in the face of reality, and I do think once we passed November 6th, people will hopefully have an opportunity to get back to thinking about the value of what government provides. And the value of what government employees provide in carrying out those services and providing those benefits.
John, you are nothing if not an optimist. That is absolutely true.
So that's good. Well, we're getting towards the end of our show here, and I want to give each of you just a few second opportunity to talk about, maybe give us your one top priority for 2012 that your organization's going to be working on.
I'll start, I guess. I think the thing I would really like to just highlight is that our annual legislative conference is coming up, and it will begin on February the 11th and go through the 15th. And we expect at least 700 people to come into town for that. In the past, we've gotten as many as 1,000. So it will be a very big deal for us, and we're encouraging as many AFGE members who are listening to sign up if you haven't already, and make sure that your voice is heard on Capitol Hill in mid-February.
Great. And Jesse, I think you have a conference too coming up.
We do. Our annual live Lobbying Day is March 14th. It is part of our larger annual national convention. We're in the process of putting together our legislative agenda for this year, and you can bet it's going to revolve around these unfair attacks on federal employees.
Great. And John, about 10 seconds left. Anything
The election will happen. We'll be having a bunch of new folks coming to town, regardless of the outcome. And I think preparing to engage with the next round of leaders will become a priority.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining us today. It was a great conversation. And that's all the time we have for the show.